Today's special Big Brother podcast with Matthew Jacobs, the author of The Oral History of Big Brother, is sponsored by eHarmony. You know, so many people have gone into the Big Brother house and found true love, like Brendan and Rachel, Jeff and Jordan, Danny and Dominic, and so many others. But if you're not in the Big Brother house, there's still hope for you to meet that special someone and form a long-term relationship. That's with eHarmony.com, because it's the number one trusted dating site, and they deliver 10 million matches daily. Their patented compatibility matching system was developed based on 30 years of clinical research on what makes happy couples tick. I hear Austin's girlfriend is even considering eHarmony.com. They're responsible for 600,000 happy marriages to date, and they're available across all devices. So experience eHarmony for 50% off the standard price for a six-month membership with promo code AUGUSTLOVE. That's eHarmony for 50% off the standard price of a six-month membership with the promo code, all one word, AUGUSTLOVE. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Sisterton here with a special edition of the podcast. We got some bonus coverage of Big Brother 17 because we are going to be talking about something I mentioned on the podcast recently, that there was an oral history of Big Brother that was written for the Huffington Post. And the man who was behind that talked to a lot of classic house guests and some recent ones also is Matthew Jacobs, and he is here with us on the line. Matthew, how's it going?
Hey, Rob. How you doing?
Very good. Very good. Very excited to talk to you about the oral history of Big Brother.
Yes, absolutely. I'm excited to join you.
So, Matthew, I was very fascinated when I read this. And I read the whole thing. I was on a plane last week, and I had a lot of time to go through it. And it was very lengthy, a lot of good stuff in here. How long had you been working on the oral history of Big Brother?
So I started this project originally anticipating a publish date of in conjunction with the season 17 premiere.
Wow.
So I started this back in May, thinking that that would be plenty of time to track down a handful of these folks, have these, you know, hour plus long conversations with each of them and piece this together. And I very quickly realized it was not nearly enough time, which is why I ended up pushing it back to the midway point of the 17th season instead. But it turned into nearly a three-month project for me.
Wow. Did you ever consider making it into a series or like turning it into an actual book?
You know, at this point, now that this phase of it is published, that I have entertained that thought. I mean, I'm a full-time staffer at HuffPost, so I had the outlet of, you know, getting to incorporate this into my day-to-day job and not needing to make it, you know, a freelance project or an extracurricular for me. It was just, you know, a part of my workload at the time. So I kind of have that deep in the back of my mind at this point, but I always knew, I didn't know what the subheads and sections of the piece would look like. I didn't know the exact angles that I would go for, but I always knew that it would take this format of kind of one standalone, lengthy oral history. Now that I've done these 15 interviews, I've like kind of, you know, taken a breather from talking hours and hours at a time about Big Brother, but I would love to pick it up and turn it into something even more thorough than it already is.
Matthew, when you came up with this idea, I'm sure you thought you knew what the story that you were going to tell was going to be. Did you have an idea of what you were going in that you felt like the story of Big Brother is?
Oh, that's a great question. I think I knew that my goal was kind of two things. First of all, and the way that I pitched it to every house guest that I ended up speaking to, was that I wanted to give Big Brother the same treatment that a lot of other reality shows get, that this one hasn't particularly. It is one of the biggest staples that we have in reality TV right now. And yet nobody writes about it in the way that they do, for example, The Bachelor, or even Survivor. I know, you know, there was a Survivor history recently as well. The Bachelor is a hot topic right now because of kind of the gender politics of that show and where we are with feminism. And Big Brother, not having ever been exactly a critical darling when it comes to reality TV, just doesn't get that kind of attention. And so my first goal was to poke behind the scenes and get people to kind of open up about their experience on the show years later, because they don't, I mean, there isn't smart journalism out there about the show a lot. And I wanted to create that. And then as far as what questions I was answering, my biggest goal was to talk about the authenticity of the show. And the reason that I was married to that, beyond obvious reasons of every reality TV show raises the question of how authentic is this? As somebody who's watched the show for many, many years, almost since the beginning, I've noticed, for example, I think the diary room sessions, and I still love the show and heap tons of praise on it and watch it religiously, but I think the diary room sessions are a really great marker of kind of the show's progression over the years. When you go back and watch diary rooms from seasons, 2, 3, 5, 7, I would say probably up through about 8, there just seems to be this certain level of authenticity that just the diary rooms feel a little bit more produced now, and I've watched that kind of play out over the past few seasons. And so I wanted to get at that and figure out, like, is it that the show has changed, or is it that people are so married to the idea of what it's like to be on Big Brother or on reality TV at large, that it just creates a different atmosphere when you're watching the show or when the producers are making the show. So my goal was to bring that critical attention that hasn't been poured into the show, and then to pick apart kind of how authentic it is and how it unfolds over the course of a summer.
Yeah, that's really interesting in terms of how the diary rooms are done. Did you go back and watch a lot of Big Brother from the previous seasons and be able to observe that evolution through the different seasons?
Yeah, I did. I didn't go back. You know, my original goal when I started, I thought, oh, I'm going to go back. I'll watch like all of my favorite season is season 3. I'll go back and watch all of season 3. And of course, I just couldn't commit that much time to it, but I did kind of fall down several YouTube rabbit holes. Mm-hmm. I went back and watched. I'd never seen the first season at all. I went back and watched a little bit of that on YouTube to get a feel for what it was like. And then I'd kind of fall down these little paths of, for example, watching several diary room sessions from throughout the years. So, I mean, Danielle Reyes is, of course, one of the most famous diary room contestants throughout the show's run. And I go and watch her diary rooms, which are so candid and unrehearsed and organic feeling, and then kind of compare them to what we've seen on, like, particularly, like, I'd say seasons like 13 through now, and just kind of trace in my own head why the diary rooms feel like they've changed, and then I get people to comment on that, and I was interested to learn how, there were several things that, across the board, kind of everybody agreed on. And I think it shines through in the whole history that everybody really finds this show, everybody who's been involved with it, to be incredibly authentic. And the piece goes a little bit into kind of how the producers frame questions to kind of get a rise out of house guests and things like that. But at the end of the day, there is no scripting and what you see is as genuine as possible within the confines of needing to produce a 3-times-a-week television show. So I was really impressed by that. And I think it's interesting to kind of think about that and then watch the show and just let yourself take a step back after kind of hearing what people say about it and realize kind of the reality TV culture that we're in right now and how that plays into the diary room.
You know, it's a really good point about the diary room also. Like, if you take a look at a season like this one, and we have a character like Becky, and it really, I feel like, has reached a saturation point where going into the last few episodes that she was on, every single time that the character of Becky was mentioned, every single person in the diary room had some sort of a train pun. And that can't possibly be a coincidence, right?
Right, and I did. So the sad thing about having to publish this in the confines of a standalone internet piece, I could have, like you said, done series. I could have done it a lot of different ways, but I wasn't writing a book. I had to to triage and get rid of some things. But I did talk a lot about that, about the puns, particularly in the diary room, also during the competition.
Yeah.
You know, whoever's like, quote-unquote, hosting the competition, like, always just magically has these, like, kind of pseudo-witty, like, one-liners to add in to, like, commentate on the competition. And I asked, like, where is this coming from? There's no way that everybody is able to come up with, like, a punchline like that on the spot. And, you know, I got very mixed responses on that. And I think the one thing that I think this piece didn't allow for was, you know, I could only interview so many people. It would just become unwieldy at a certain point. And the people that I sought out were people who I felt would give good interviews more than anything else. I wanted people who were candid, who weren't a mouthpiece for CBS, who didn't just want to praise the show in hopes of going on another All-Star season or something like that. I wanted realism out of these interviews. And I think I ended up talking to a lot of people who probably didn't need those sound bites fed to them. Andy Heron and I talked about that for a good while. James Rhine and I talked about that for a good while. You know, two people who were great in the diary room and obviously wouldn't have needed one-liners fed to them. So it was an interesting thing. I think they both, and all of them, many of them kind of said, I could, without naming names, I could tell you people that I thought would have been fed lines versus people who could handle it on their own, so to speak. So my piece wasn't able to kind of dig quite as deep as I wanted to on that, but it's also because I didn't seek out like the Victorias of the world,
right,
for example, from season 16, who I have no doubt in my mind was fed all of her diary room content, for example.
I think this is a really interesting list of people that you spoke to, and I'm going to have the link to the article. I'll post that in the show notes, and I'll give it out at the end of the show. But the people that you spoke to in the article were Will Mega, Mike Boogie, Danielle Reyes, Erica Landon, Jack Owens, James Rhine, Eric Stein, Sheila Kennedy, Dan Giesling, Jordan, Jeff, Shima, Ian Terry, Andy Heron, and Jason from this season. Very interesting group across all the seasons.
Yeah.
Now, was this the group that you sat down and said, okay, this is the group I want to hit, or did you have a different group in your mind and ultimately talk to these people? What led you to this particular group?
So there was no exact science to how I pieced together who would be featured, but I did have a few people in mind who I knew were essential. And those were, of course, Mike Boogie, Danielle Reyes, and Dan Giesling. Those are my three. Also, Dr. Will Kirby, who I will say declined to be interviewed for the piece. So those are my four. Those are my four kind of, these are your like classic Big Brother players who really shape the game, and it would be, the piece would be missing something without them.
Let me ask you about Will real quick. Why did Will decline?
He just said he wasn't interested in participating at the time.
Okay.
He didn't really get very elaborate on it, and I was kind of surprised that he declined, but of course I respect that, you know, prerogative, and if he's ready to kind of move on from the Big Brother world, I, you know, of course understand that.
I'm not sure that's the case.
I was very sympathetic, but yeah, disappointed that he wasn't able to be part of it.
Okay.
And, you know, beyond that, so I knew I had a couple of things going. So Andy Heron and I have been Twitter friends for a while. And so he was actually my first interview that I did for it. We spent a good 2 hours on the phone, just really going over like the technical aspects of the show, the nitty gritty of like, okay, you move in on the first day. Like, what exactly do you do? And so on and so forth from there. And he pointed me in a couple people's direction. He linked me to Eric Stein and Danielle as well. So it was kind of a mix of me going through the seasons, knowing that I needed to get a range of people, going all the way back to season one, even though I hadn't seen it, and fill in the holes from there. And it really was a matter of me either having people connect me to others. So, for example, I reached out to Erica. She then, after I talked to her, she put me in touch with Jack Owen, who, of course, she was good friends with in season four.
Yeah.
So a lot of it unfolded like that. The rest of it came together. I would look at the cast list, and I wanted a variety of people who serve different roles on the show. So I wanted, for example, I picked Sheila from season 9 because she represented an older female who played the game at that time. I wanted Jack because he represented an older male. Ian represented the youngest person on his cast. I wanted Shima because I needed somebody who'd been expelled from the show. I wanted Jeff and Jordan because they have the showmance aspect and then, of course, were, you know, got engaged on the show. And so it was really filling in a lot of holes of the various types of people the show has cast while also making sure that I, you know, give due diligence to the entire course of the series because, of course, even though the format is more or less, you know, what it's been since season two, there have been many evolutions, and I wanted to make sure that I captured a lot of that.
I think the person that had the best stuff in the article, I think probably not a huge surprise, but Danielle Reyes, I just felt like that she had a emotion about what she was talking about that, you know, a lot of other people were talking about some surface things, but she was really getting into it about her experience.
Yes. Well, Danielle, I have to say, and I told her this and I would tell anybody, is my very, very favorite Big Brother player ever, and I don't think anybody can possibly top her in my book. And she was such a delight to talk to. You are absolutely right. She gave the, I'm not, you know, this is not a convoluted, tough statement in their direction. They all gave wonderful interviews, but Danielle was just a mile ahead as she usually is. Her answers not only were well spoken and also original, but she really did come across as somebody who has really taken the time to assess what the experience was like and has really been able to position it well. Some people leave the show. There are people that I obviously, you know, wouldn't have been interested in talking to because I thought that they were more on the show for the fame than the experience. So I tried to go for people who are actually there for the experience. And she really just, I mean, not that I needed to be won over, but she just won me over so much with how wise and measured she was about the way she views the show. I love what she said about, you know, the fans always want to pick apart who won a season and say, well, this person didn't deserve to win and this is why. And her take was, you can't say that because that person found a way to strategize among the conditions that he or she was given inside that house. Maybe to us on watching on TV, their game was quieter or they made this move or that move, but it doesn't matter because they won over the, you know, 10, 12, 16 people they were in the house with and deserve to win in that regard alone. And I think that's a really smart thing to say. And that's just one example of some of the really wonderful things that Danielle brought to the table.
Also, it seemed like a lot of the players you talked to, if not most of them, seemed to have especially high opinions of the games that they all played.
Oh, that is a great point. That is without a doubt. I don't even know quite how to even go down that path I knew that would be the case. I mean, look at some of the people in this piece. I mean, you've got James Ryan, who is also one of my favorite players, but he's a self-proclaimed jackass. I mean, you know, that's not even my assessment. I mean, he will tell you exactly how it is and exactly who should have won and exactly how he played. I think, you know, Mike Boogie, for example, is very aware of, you know, his dominance in All Stars and what he did again in season 14. I think you're right. I think everybody is quite confident with their tenure on the game.
Yeah. James Ryan did refer to himself as everybody kept telling him he was the second coming of Dr. Will.
Yes. Yes. And actually, if anybody's name came, I mean, unsurprisingly, if anybody's name came up repeatedly throughout the interviews, it was Dr. Will. Everybody was compared or contrasted to Dr. Will throughout the series run. So again, another bummer that he opted not to partake. But yes, and interesting also that the producers are looking at it from that angle too, that they're able to, you know, go to James, have him do a couple interviews and tell him, and Danielle was told the same thing, that that we see you as the next person who fills this Dr. Will role. And I think both of them, because, you know, Danielle is also quite confident in her game, at least in season three she is. I had some more stuff on All Stars that I was actually originally going to do an entire section on All Stars, and then I thought it was just a little too narrow. Anybody who joined the series season eight or later, you know, that it would be lost on them, and so right. I ended up cutting that section and kind of folding some of All Stars into the other sections. But you know, Danielle, interesting to hear Danielle talk very positively of her gameplay in season three and very negatively of her gameplay in All Stars. Mm. You know, whereas James, I think, is pretty confident in himself on both seasons, and not wrongly so. And yes, many of them were in that same camp.
I felt one of the other people that were really interesting that you talked to was Shima, because she was the person who definitely had the most negative things to say about the show, to the point that she almost made it seem like that it was all a plot to sort of get her out of the house and throw off her game, and they were just trying to get this reaction out of her. What was your reaction to some of the things that she was saying?
You know, I thought Shima was important to the piece for a few reasons. One thing that I'll say about somebody who would kind of be in contrast in terms of their interview style to Shima would be, you know, Mike Bogie and Dan Giesling, who are two of the acclaimed players of the show. They were probably the most mouthpiece-y when it comes to how they portrayed the producer's hand in the show. Mm-hmm. It very much felt like, you know, they were candid, they were honest, but it also felt like they drank the Kool-Aid a little bit, if you will.
Yeah.
Which I included little bits and pieces of and would make sure and made sure not to go too heavy into. But I wanted somebody who had the opposite take of that. I wanted somebody who really did have a negative experience, because that story is worth telling as well. The tricky thing that you get into on kind of a journalistic level, as somebody who wants to ultimately write a piece that celebrates the show in an honest way, is I don't know what sort of axes anybody might have to grind, and not having been able to interview anybody with the show on a producer level, on a network level, I do recognize that Shima's comments, there's a second side to that story. But to me, Shima's presence in the piece was the second side to my Boogie story, for example. So his incredibly positive experiences with production, which I'm sure are authentic, I'm sure he means that wholeheartedly. He's also a winner. Dan is a winner of the series. Of course their experiences with production are going to be more positive than Shima. So to me, it was about having that balance. I thought that everything that Shima said was actually fairly measured. I mean, we ended up talking a little bit about it. And her interview with the last one, I did very last minute. I did it because I was kind of wrapping up the piece and realized I don't have anybody who was expelled. And I've got these people talking about the experiences of watching somebody be expelled from the show, and I don't have any firsthand accounts of that. So it was a very last minute interview, but she did say that the producers of the show, outside of her experience, they know what they're doing and they're good at their job, and they understand the dynamic that exists between a production staff that is dictating, the way something is portrayed on TV versus the people who are inside the house actually living it. And so I thought, I made the assessment that her axe was not ground so heavily into the show, that she was mature and measured enough to where I didn't have to worry about her maybe saying something that was untrue about the experience that she went through, or possibly, defamatory toward, the way the show was made.
Did you reach out to anybody from the production team, like an Alison Grodner or any of the other producers, or Robin Cass?
I did, absolutely. I reached out to all of them. I contacted CBS's Big Brother publicist, I guess maybe a few weeks after I started the piece, I'd already done a handful of interviews at that point. And I wanted to get on the books, let them know that I was working on it, and get on the books and interview with Allison Grodner and Rich Meehan, the two top folks at Big Brother. Or I said, even if, because I knew the season was approaching, I knew it would be tricky to get some time with them, even if it was a lower level producer or somebody more on the network angle of it, you know, I'd talk to anybody. And I thought the interviews were going to come through. They were a little cautious. They said, you know, we'd really like to know which house guests will be in this piece before granting the interview, which, you know, automatically told me that they were a little worried, which I totally understand because, like I said, Big Brother has never been a critical darling of the reality TV industry, and I understand that the first assumption might be that this is going to be some kind of hit job on the show, which obviously was never my intent. And I explained that to them, and I somewhat hesitantly, but I did give them a few names of people that I'd spoken with, and they said, let's try to get something set up with Allison and Rich. And so I thought it was going to come through. When I followed up a week or so later, you know, the season was quickly approaching. I mean, we were, I think, days or, you know, so out of the season 17 premiere. And they just said that Allison and Rich and the other producers just didn't have time to swing it, which, you know, you can take with a grain of salt or not. I reached out to Robin Cass through Twitter, which is a very, you know, haphazard way of trying to request an interview. I have no idea whether she even saw the message that I sent her. I know she did tweet the piece and complimented after it was done. So I know she's in support of what's in the piece. But I didn't get on the phone with her or Julie Chen, who I also wanted. And at first I was bummed by that. And of course, if I were to turn this into something larger, I would have to have that producer house guest kind of back and forth. But I was also okay with letting it stand as a house guest tell all. I think it came together pretty nicely, despite the fact that there were many points throughout that I would have loved, particularly with casting and how they filled these certain archetypes and things about, you know, the number of minorities they cast on any season or what is asked in the diary room. There were lots of things I really did feel I needed a producer to kind of, you know, validate or not. But at the end of the day, I feel comfortable and was happy with what I got from the house guests that I did speak with.
Matthew, how did you end up getting Will Mega?
So Will Mega, I also, season one was hard. Again, I don't know the cast of season one that well, so it was really just looking at the names and trying to figure out who I could find via social media and picking and just submitting to whatever interview I could line up. I tried to track down Eddie and couldn't, I don't even remember at this point. I sent some messages to some that went unresponded, you know, without a response. And I ended up tweeting Will one day, and I thought that was an interesting angle because he was the first person ever evicted from Big Brother, or actually what was called banished back then, which I didn't even know it was called that until I got on the phone with him. So the season one thing was very interesting, and he hopped on the phone, and I didn't know how that interview would go just because I was, you know, I knew I didn't know as much there, and I needed him to fill in a lot of knowledge gaps for me. And also, it's been so long that I don't know what he even remembers about the experience, but he was so candid and forthcoming. And I thought he did some of the most interesting work in the piece to kind of draw together the transition that reality TV has seen over the years. I thought the stuff with him talking about how he kind of broke some of the rules and was punished as a result, and then they basically wrote the rules that he broke into the next season. Like the producers originally didn't imagine that the house guests would just be lying to one another about what was going on and things. And then they basically rewrote the show to encourage people to lie to one another. Mm-hmm. I thought there were some really interesting connections there that he brought into the piece. And it was a really lively discussion. So I'm glad he ended up being the person that I found for season one.
So we're in this very interesting spot, I think, that, you know, 15 years after the premiere of Big Brother, Big Brother is enjoying a season, which I think that most fans would say has been a resurgent season for the show, especially compared to the last couple of years where not everybody, I think, in the fan community loved everything about the past couple of seasons. The season has also become a ratings darling. You'd probably know better than me, but it definitely seems like night after night after night this summer, Big Brother has done surprisingly well, right?
It has, and I totally agree with all the praise that's been heaped on season 17. I'm loving this year. I think Robin and Cass and the producers have really found the perfect crop of people to sort of bring the show kind of back to its roots a little bit.
In what way? How do you see that they've brought the show back to its roots?
Well, what I mean by that I feel like this is the show. This is the first season in several years that has cast a group of people that is 100% there to play the game. I don't feel like there's anybody there who, at this point, especially, who's there for the fame, which was obviously not the case in season 16. It was so glaringly obvious that Frankie and Zach and others were just there so that they could be on TV. I feel like so in finding people who are there to play a reality competition game and not to soak up 15 minutes of fame, I think really puts the show back on a bar that it originally was hitting. As far as ratings go, you know, that's an interesting discussion. The ratings this season have been very good. The catch there is that the reason Big Brother keeps getting renewed and will probably continue to do so is because the stakes for it are fairly low.
Mm-hmm.
It's a summer show, so there's not much competition on the network TV stations. And so when you see these headlines, Big Brother wins Wednesday night, Big Brother wins Thursday night, the caveat there is compare what it's up against. You have this legion of fans who tune in every year, who will follow the show no matter what three nights CBS chooses, and they're with it. And it has been up a little bit, but I'd be careful not to kind of overblow those headlines, just because the reason that Big Brother is such a lucrative thing for CBS is because it's incredibly inexpensive for them. The format costs almost no money for the network, and it produces this legion of fans that follow the show. And so it's kind of a guaranteed rating gold mine in the confines of summer reality TV. But I agree that it's a great season, and I'm glad that people are tuned into it elevating where the show is right now.
Yeah, I do think it speaks well of the health of the franchise. You've covered the first 15 years of Big Brother in the article. Where do you think Big Brother goes from here? Do you think that Big Brother is a long-term fixture on television, or are you feeling like we're beginning to get near the end of Big Brother?
You know, I debate that every year. Every year I worry that, because I love the show so much, despite some, you know, I know I've said things about the diary rooms, all that. I still adore the show, of course, and I would hate to see it leave our lives. So I debate it every year, because when you compare the ratings of Big Brother, they're nothing compared to Survivor or American Idol is kind of a different case now. But you know, when American Idol was in its heyday, they don't stack up. And so I worry that someday CBS will look around and say, okay, let's just forget this and try something new. The reason that I don't think they'll do that anytime soon, though, is what I just said about how inexpensive it is for the network to produce. My bigger worry or question would be, at what point is, and I don't know where exactly, you know, what sort of contract she's locked into or anything like that, but when is Julie Chen going to decide that she's done with this? And because if she does, that's a huge part of the show that's lost. I mean, obviously Julie Chen is a figurehead in the Big Brother experience, as indicated in the article. Of course, she has no hand in the actual show, and is just there to show up for an hour on Thursday nights. But she's such an integral fixture in what we think of as the essence of Big Brother that I just hope she doesn't wake up one day and say, I'm done with this. On the other hand, I think she's getting paid handsomely for this show, and she's married to the president of the network, so that's not that big of a worry to me either. I think we're in for a good few more years of Big Brother. Of course, it will tire out, but also, you know, this show has been on, as I said at the top of the piece, this show has been on longer than The Amazing Race, longer than American Idol, longer than almost any other reality TV show that we think of as being part of that early 2000s, like, proliferation of reality TV. I don't think it's going away anytime soon, but of course I don't speak for the network or anybody, you know, involved with the show.
Yeah. And I actually think that losing Julie Chen, I think that they could survive that. Now, does that make Les Moonves less interested in it? And could it survive when Les Moonves eventually is going to retire? And if somebody else steps in, are they going to want to be as invested in three nights of Big Brother every summer? That we don't know, but we'll just enjoy the ride for the time being.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a good point. I mean, the show will live on. The fans would follow it even without Julie Chen. But I think at least your YouTube montages of her saying butt first would take a hit.
Yeah. And that was a great title for the article to go with, Butt First, An Oral History of Big Brother.
I had to. I mean, there was just no other option. Yeah. Just that I didn't even entertain a second thought.
All right. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on to talk with us about it. I'm going to put out the link to the article. You can get a short link at robiswebsite.com/BB Oral History, robiswebsite.com/BB Oral History. And you could follow Matt on Twitter at, how do you pronounce this Twitter handle, Matt?
It's Terrence Allegra, which is the spell in Harry Potter to make someone dance. I nobody knows how to pronounce it, so it's somewhat of a regrettable handle, but I love it anyway. But it is Terrence Allegra.
All right. Well, Matthew, thank you so much for coming on to talk about Big Brother. Anything else you want to let people know about?
No, I mean, I think you covered it. I mean, I would say there were other people that I really would have loved to speak to for the piece that I reached out to via, you know, Facebook and Twitter who didn't get back. And who probably never even saw the message because, you know, they have tens of thousands of followers and it's easy to get lost in the shuffle. But I was bummed not to speak to Nokomis, for example. She's so influential to the game with the six-finger plan. I think the piece still has a gap without her in it. I really wanted Allison Irwin because she's such a villain. I wanted Monica Bailey because she was in the house when 9/11 happened, which I thought would have made for a very strange experience and anecdote. Obviously, Will Kirby, Danielle Donato, Janelle was somebody who didn't get back to me that I was very bummed about. So there are lots of other people who would contribute to further conversation about what it's like to be on Big Brother. But I'm excited and proud of the people who did speak to me. They were all great.
Okay. Matthew, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Matthew Jacobs from the HuffingtonPost.com to talk about the oral history of Big Brother. Very excited to get back into covering Big Brother. We are going to be live with recaps after every episode of Big Brother the rest of the way, every Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday, right after the East Coast airing on robhaswebsite.com. If you want to make sure you never miss an episode of Rob Has a Podcast, subscribe on iTunes, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. And again, we always love to get your feedback and your star ratings on iTunes. It helps more and more people find the show. Have a good one. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments, and I'll talk to you again soon. Bye.